It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to hour number two of Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And now we're very happy to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and welcome in Robert Klemko from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, who wrote a very, very intriguing article, How Quarterbacks Are Made, examining the youth football careers and family backgrounds of the 15 quarterbacks taken in this year's NFL draft. Robert, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Robert, are you there?
Sorry, can you guys hear me?
Yep, got you now. Thank you so much for being with us, and I found your article an absolutely fascinating read, and what was kind of the main takeaway you had from conducting all this research, talking with all these guys, their families, their specialty coaches, and everything?
Well, I think that kind of the main point of the piece is trying to illustrate how much and how many resources it takes and how much support you have to become a quarterback in the NFL. And I think that's intuitive for a lot of people, but just to get into the real nitty-gritty, you know, two-parent homes, upper middle class, access to individual instruction, access to off-season football, we found that almost across the board, all of the quarterbacks that were drafted in 2016 had these things. And it really came down to an abundance of resources.
Was the intent behind it simply to shine a light on it, or was it potentially to even maybe impact, you know, youth football players now and parents who think they've got the next best thing because there's camps everywhere? Should they go? Should they not? Should they hire, you know, coaches on the side and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think the intent was just to illustrate what it takes and how there is a significantly large pool of kids that can become quarterbacks, but there's also an equally large, or if not larger, pool of players and kids and athletes who just don't have a chance because of a lack of resources, because of a lack of access to all the things that we talked about. I got inspired to write the piece by reading some of Malcolm Gladwell's work, specifically the book Outliers, and then just talking with parents of quarterbacks and high school coaches that I knew about how much the process has changed in the last 20 years to getting noticed as a quarterback.
Well, and one of the points you also make is that quarterbacks aren't like other positions. It's something that you almost, because of the nuance of the position and the instincts needed to succeed, it's something that you need to be working on seemingly your whole life, as it shows here. And you have the couple of outliers that you mentioned that didn't follow that path. But is it amazing to you that, you know, it's almost like these guys are being groomed to be quarterbacks from a very, very young age?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit here on my end. But I think one of the big things that I was a little bit surprised by was how young a lot of these quarterbacks had started.
Exactly.
I mean, most of those guys were 9 and 10 years old when they got their first shot. And if you don't have that kind of experience being a leader and the reputation of being a quarterback by the time you get to high school, it's very difficult to then make that leap to major college football and into the NFL.
So I guess that being said is, I know that, and I keep going back to youth football, I have young kids. The emphasis now is of course, learning the way you play the game with the heads-up program that the NFL or the initiative they've started. But also, they're wanting you to diversify and play multiple sports rather than just hone in and focus on one thing. But yet, in your article, it seems that these young men are honing in not only on essentially one sport, but one position, and them and their parents are putting a lot of time and resources behind their success.
Yeah. Most of the players in the NFL played multiple sports in high school, and I think something like 70% of quarterbacks that were in this draft played multiple sports, and that's among the low numbers for when comparing to the rest of the position. And part of that is guys who played basketball and played baseball in 9th and 10th grade and then decided to focus on football because the off seasons were so rigorous for these kids. I mean, I think it was something like 13 out of 15. It was either 12 out of 15 or 13 out of 15 played extensively in 7-on-7 football. And
yeah,
that was huge for the development of a lot of these guys, just simply getting these reps.
You know, what struck me was it seems that their parents and the fathers in particular walk a very fine line between being completely overbearing, but also supporting and helping these guys live out their dreams. Was the parent study almost as fascinating as the player study?
Yeah, you start to get kind of a profile for what a quarterback dad is like. I mean, they're all very similar. I was talking to Bruce Feldman, who wrote a book about quarterbacks, and he was saying that Oliver Luck, Andrew Luck's father, gave him all the resources and all the instruction that he wanted and needed, but also was very careful about not being too involved. You know, he never went to go watch the practices. He never tried to give any input to the high school coach. So you're right. It's a very fine line, and I think that there are parents who cross that line who kind of hurt their kids' chances.
Well, and you mentioned that Connor Cook's dad was regarded as a red flag by some NFL teams. Do you believe that's one of the reasons that he stayed on the board a lot longer than maybe people thought?
I think it's one of the reasons, but I think the fact that he wasn't a captain and everything that implied was a bigger reason. And the two things are probably related. I mean, you'd have to really talk to Connor and get honest answers about, you know, how he grew up and what kind of impact his dad had. But there are a lot of NFL teams who will not pick a quarterback if they're not extremely comfortable with the family structure.
So I think in reference to the quarterback, almost on every level, based on everything that you've said, the one word that jumps out to me from team to kid or team to parents, parents to the kid, kid to the coach or the program that they take part in, is really trust. You really have to trust the coach, as you said, in reference to Oliver Luck not going to the – you have to trust that those high school coaches know what they're doing and they know what's best for Andrew in that case.
Yeah.
So that it allows him the ability to step away. Or if you do have a coach on the side, you have to, you know, trust that coach on the side to groom him and get him ready and see the progress when he actually steps foot on the football field.
Yeah. You didn't find any quarterbacks when I was doing this study that didn't have a successful high school football coach who had a track record of – sending kids to the next level. I mean, there were absolutely no coaches who didn't fit that bill. And I think that a lot of these kids, when they're in eighth and ninth grade, and if their fathers and their mothers have any sort of influence or resources, they're essentially scouting out high school programs and picking a high school much like you would pick a college.
Right.
That's unique to quarterbacks in a lot of ways. Just because the high school development and the opportunity to play is so big in terms of getting recruited. I mean, if you don't have sophomore and junior film, then you run the risk of not going to a program that kind of fits your skill set. The only guy who didn't fit that bill in the study was Carson Wentz, who didn't play quarterback until senior year, and that's how you end up going to North Dakota State.
Yeah, an amazing journey. Talk with Robert Klemko, who wrote an article on the art of making a quarterback now in the National Football League, profiling the 15 quarterbacks drafted in the 2016 NFL draft. Robert, one of them obviously came to the Cleveland Browns and didn't get a lot of talk in the article, Cody Kessler, but what can you tell us about his background and what you discovered about Cody Kessler's journey to the National Football League?
Yeah, you know, I only spoke with his high school coach, and it was very brief. With a lot of these guys that were supposed to be picked in the later rounds, it was more of a checklist type conversation,
okay, as
opposed to really diving deep into it. And obviously the Browns took Cody Kessler a lot earlier than many people thought. And I think that is a product of relationships that Hugh Jackson has at USC. And when you're talking about quarterbacks and you're researching them, I think you want to talk to people you trust about their work ethic and their study habits and kind of what makes them tick. That seems to be the biggest thing. And there's nobody in the NFL in a better position to get that information out of USC people than Hugh Jackson is.
As you look at this study, and you talked about how much has changed over the last 10 or 20 years, in diving in as deep as you did, is there anything trending moving forward, you know, that people might not be available to young people, or that's happening that's, you know, 5 or 10 years away to continue to bridge the gap and kind of pinpoint who's got it and who doesn't, you know, the younger these kids get?
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to see an abundance of 7-on-7 programs. I mean, that's been huge in the last decade. There's one team in South Florida called the South Florida Express that's run by a former high school football coach that has produced Teddy Bridgewater, Geno Smith, and seventh-round pick in this draft, Brandon Dowdy. The weeding out process begins early. So I think that you're going to see a big emphasis on identifying late risers, especially after Carson Wentz. I mean, these recruiting websites and services that college teams use. They have every resource at their disposal to be able to identify these guys later in their high school careers, and I think you're going to start seeing more of that in an effort to make this a little bit more of a meritocracy.
Talk with Robert Klemko, and you know, you talked a lot about these 7-on-7s and these tours that teams go on, and they take these high school players on tours. What is that? Because I know that it was out there, but it's not something that you get much publicity on going, you know, that you've heard about, really talked about for these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and a great example is right there in your backyard, Glenville in
right.
Cleveland. Ted Ginn Sr. is the head coach there, and he's taken his kids on a Big Ten tour, something like 10, 11, 12 days for 20 years.
Wow.
And these are kids who, if not for being a part of one of the great high school football programs in Ohio, might not even have this opportunity. And I think that was huge for a lot of these guys. I mean, it's as a quarterback, it's not enough to just be good. You also have to get noticed.
Yeah, and some guys don't have that access. It's one thing when you're, you know, especially when you talk about Glenville, that when your family can bring you around and afford to do that. It's another thing when you don't have that luxury, and yet you have a coach who takes it upon himself to make that happen for these guys.
Exactly. One of the things that really struck me was the story of Cardale Jones, and he comes from that Glenville program, and you imagine with everything that he was facing, all the obstacles, you know, being raised by a single mom, just the all of the evictions and arrests that are in his family history. I mean, all of those things scream that he should have not been able to make it to this point. But, you know, he was associated with this Glenville program, and Ted Ginn gave him all this access.
Sure. And last question for me, again, I just know this being around youth sports, is technology now more so than ever is bridging the gap between coaches and players, especially high school players on their way to college, with apps like The Huddle and so on and so forth that allows them to have their tape, put it on a smartphone, on a tablet, and send it off to college coaches to have that type of exposure. Is that something that we can see creep younger and younger over time?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I remember being in high school. I was in high school in 2005, and we would cut up our own VHS tapes and make 12 copies and send them out to the schools that we were interested in. Now you can just tweet a link to your Huddle highlight video at an assistant coach, and he's actually going to watch it.
Right.
And if you're good enough, he's going to get in touch with your high school football coach and eventually your family. Technology has helped make this process, like I said before, a little bit more of a meritocracy. At the same time, if you don't have access to that, all that individual instruction that a lot of these top prospects get, if you don't have access to off-season football, it's still hard to bridge that gap.
Robert, really appreciate the time. Fascinating article, and I urge everybody to check it out at Monday Morning Quarterback right now. It's mmqb.si.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Robert Klemko. Awesome stuff, fascinating stuff. What's next in the pipeline for you?
Oh, a little bit of a break. I'm actually in New Orleans at a bachelor party. So.
Oh, well, then get off the phone with us and go get on Bourbon Street. We appreciate it. Go. Yes, Robert, thank you. Enjoy yourself down there.
Thank you.
All right, Robert Klemko from a bachelor party. Now I feel bad. New Orleans is going to have a good time down there.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. Good stuff. And definitely check out his article. Give him some clicks from us. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, and Dino in for Jason Gibbs today. We're about an hour and a half away from the first rookie minicamp practice for this massive 14-person draft class of the Browns here in 2016. Let us know what you're looking forward to seeing, 216-578-0850. And I got to tell you, I thought his article was fascinating and talking about Robert Klemko about the quarterbacks, because it is a position that unless you were groomed for it and unless you were in a certain situation that you could go to the Elite 11 camps and you can go play in these 7-on-7 leagues and drive around and do all that stuff, that it's going to be real hard to be an NFL quarterback. The days of like
going,
beating the odds.
Well, it's not anymore that you wake up in your town, you go to middle school in your town, you play quarterback, you go to high school in your town, you play quarterback, you're real good, you go to college, you play quarterback, you go to the NFL. Now it's year-round, you're in seven-on-seven leagues, you're traveling around, you're doing these tours, and it's not just play football, get noticed, get to a college, play well at college, go to the NFL. It's almost, in some ways, it sounds like a full-time job for these kids as well as for their parents.
Right. And that's where my question was coming from. As I said, you know, simply being involved in youth sports and being very attentive to, you know, a lot of the trends going on and the messages that are being sent, you just laid out it being a full-time job. How do you have time to either A, enjoy baseball or basketball or wrestling when you're essentially missing out? Now, I know that a quarterback's probably not wrestling, but a quarterback's probably playing baseball, maybe pitching or playing hoops, you know, in the winter, depending on what state you're in. But I've seen it, having lived on the West Coast when the weather is nice, I always thought this about my son, and it may become reality, is when the time comes, if football's going to be his thing, I want to go move to a state that obviously has a great football bloodline into college athletics, and I know Ohio does as well, but I want to give him the opportunity to practice his craft all year round. No need to go inside. You know, no, it's just like it's camp after camp after camp after camp after camp. And even here in Northeast Ohio, there's a few people doing it, but a lot of, you know, I don't want to get kids, you know, you can't get left in the dust.
But is that almost too much for the kids? Like, when does it become too much for a kid?
I've had this conversation before, you know, when I felt like when we were doing indoor, you know, again, this is winter, indoor football along with basketball, and my son was doing judo. So 5 days a week, he had something in an evening. And I just had to have the conversation like, this is way too much. Like, I don't like it for me. He's not enjoying switching uniforms in the car, putting on his gi to go into judo, and like, you know, it was just too much.
Never ending.
It was never ending. Never ending for him or us. Sometimes you just need to go, and this is, I guess, and this is where the parent, who wants it more? The parent for your son or the son for himself and for his family?
Right, that's
the fine
I mean.
Line. That's the fine line. And if there's a mutual interest, like, and that's where I think I'm still learning is, like, if you want it, I'll go 120 miles an hour with you.
Sure.
But if you don't, I'll taper back to 60 and make sure it's fun and you're good and you're a good teammate and a leader and a captain and all those other things. But when you want to say, hey, this is it and I want to go play, when I have to have that conversation, I will stop what I'm doing to make sure that you get there.
And it is interesting. He still said that 70% of the guys played two sports of the quarterbacks. But at the other positions in the NFL draft, it's almost 100% of the guys play two sports in high school. So it's at some point, though, you know, you've got to flip the switch and say, I'm all in, you know, on this.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's just for me, and I'm a little older than you are, it wasn't even like, and I grew up in California in the Bay Area, where plenty of guys who played in the pros came from around my area. Tom Brady went to the school very close to my house. And it just wasn't like that. It wasn't, you know, AAU stuff was starting up. And you heard about it, funny, ironically, more for all year round. You heard much more about basketball, baseball, travel baseball, and swimming. But you didn't hear about all year round football. And then now you're hearing these 7-on-7 leagues. Like, were those 7-on-7 leagues even around?
No. That conversation when he was said, you know, this is 20 years ago. No, it's 15, maybe 15. And I was going to interject this, but Tom Lemming, he's like a college football recruiting guru. Like, he puts together kind of like, it's like, I think he might be even work for Rivals, but puts together like recruiting. Tom Lemming, this is how non technology we were back then. Tom Lemming would like fly into Columbus and to get in touch with us recruits, call us, put together a sit down and drive to us, you know, and he'd drive to your high school to get your VHS tapes so that he could evaluate your tapes, or they'd be mailed, you know, to him to watch. And I remember having to meet him, you know, one-on-one. He does your headshot, he does an interview, you know, he wants to, you know, talk with you so that he could put a report together on you for his website. Well, again, he's technology advanced now.
Sure.
But it just goes to show where everything is in the palm of my hand, and I can have, you know, I have friends of mine who have kids in high school who go, what do you think of my son so-and-so at left tackle or at this position or at that? And I mean, mind you, I take a quick glance just because I want to be a good friend, but it's like, it's in my hand. It's a link in my email
right.
for me to click on. And I get their son
so
on a
easy.
Football field from an entire season.
Yeah, you used to have to sit there with VHS tapes and make your own
right
tape.
Yeah, and multiple tapes. If you're, I mean, you go game by game. That means I'm sending you 10 tapes.
Right.
Yeah. It's. I mean, that's changed a lot.
Yeah, now guys can make their own YouTube channel, you know, and direct all the people to it. You can make your own YouTube channel. You can bring everybody in and say, here's, you want to learn about, check me out. Here's my highlight.
Right.
Date.
And that link gets forwarded and forwarded. And he made a great point. It's going to show up on an assistant coach's email inbox, not the head coach, not the coordinator, maybe not the recruiting coordinator, but that coach is going to look, and he'll probably give you 5 good minutes. He's got the attention span for 5 minutes because he gets so many of them.
Sure.
I'm going to watch the first 10 plays. Boom, 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 boom. If you don't make me rewind and have to see it again,
I'm out.
You're off the Rolodex. We're out.
We're
but
out.
If you wow me, I go, wait, who is this kid? Where is he from?
Right.
Are we recruiting him? Is he even on our list? Because he might not technically be like my sector of the country. Has Coach Meyer seen this? Boom, forward it to him. And he's watching it at his desk.
Yeah.
That's the process.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It is amazing how much it's changed. All right, when we come back, time for the Friday forecast. 216-578-0850 here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Rookie minicamp about to kick off in about an hour and 20 minutes here in Berea. And, of course, tomorrow you can see them practice in all their glory. All you got to do is come out to the Cleveland Browns Fan Fest at First Energy Stadium and check out all the great Browns activities, guests, programming, items, merchandise, autographs, everything. They are Cleveland Browns Fan Fest. Anything. It's basically like going to Disneyland for a Browns fan for a day.
This is true.
It is true. We'll be back. Zagur and Wilhelm on CBD. I've been counting all my steps. All my nose just turned to yes. Silently, I must confess.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and our producer today, Dino. Dave DiNatale joins us now for the Friday forecast. Dino.
Yes, guys. How's everybody doing?
Good, man. How are you?
All right. Let's start first.
Number one.
The Twitter site College Football 24/7 projects Jared Goff, Miles Jack, and Ezekiel Elliott as the top three rookies of 2016. Make me a list. Give me your top three rookies of 2016.
Well, I'm going to say Ezekiel Elliott. Slight Buckeye bias, but it makes so much sense of why he will be a top rookie with Romo back, Dez Bryant, a team that essentially drafted him to compete and play early behind that offensive line. So I'm going to go Ezekiel Elliott immediately. Going into the draft, I'm going to say Corey Coleman sets up to have a great year as a rookie in the National Football League. He really does. Because he's explosive. I think Hugh Jackson will have whoever plays quarterback ready to play, and Corey Coleman will be used exactly the way he's supposed to be used. And then lastly, I would say
they don't even have Corey Coleman in their top 20.
That's a mistake.
That is a mistake.
They've got Ogba at 22, unless I missed it. I may have missed it. I'm going to find it. Ogba's at 22.
Okay. And I'm going to go with another receiver and the guy that so many people thought we should have. I think Laquon Treadwell is going to have a good year as a rookie with Teddy.
All right, I'm still searching right now because maybe that was a complete mistake. No. Oh, my God. Where do you think they have Corey Coleman in the top 100 potential impact rookies in the NFL's year?
81st.
50th behind Roberto Aguayo.
The kicker?
The kicker from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This should be on Corey Coleman's Chase Badbread.
50th.
Come on. I mean, listen. I mean, it's fun to kick. I mean, I know it's fun for the national people to kick around the Browns, but come on. They're going to be better offensively, don't we think?
I do think so. Okay. So my answers would be number one, Ezekiel Elliott. Number two, Jared Goff. And then I'm going to say number three, Josh Dotson, because I thought he was the most ready to play wide receiver of all of them this year. So those are the three. Now, guys that are going to do things that might not necessarily show up in the stat sheet that I think are going to have massive, massive impacts. Number one is going to be Sheldon Rankins from the New Orleans Saints. I think this guy is going to be like the next Aaron Donald. I think he's going to be a very, very good player. Miles Jack, I'm very excited about as well. And another one kind of from the maybe under the radar, but I think he's just going to be used so well, is from the Ohio State Buckeyes, Darren Lee in the Jets defense. I think he's going to be exceptional.
I do too. I just don't know if he's going to be on the field enough, because he's not going to start right out of the gates as an inside linebacker in that 3-4
defense.
Needs
some time.
He needs some time.
Is Ragland maybe a better pick since they've already anointed him a starter in Buffalo?
Yes.
Reggie
and
Ragland.
Who's is Shaq Lawson there as well?
Shaq Lawson was the first
Lawson
round pick.
I expect to be a very impactful in that defense too.
I mean, so here are the receivers that let's get old takes exposed to pay attention to this. Are you ready? Here are the receivers in terms of the impact players according to Chase Goodbread on this. Number 11, Josh Dotson. Number 15, Michael Thomas with the New Orleans Saints. Number 19, Laquon Treadwell with the Minnesota Vikings, who I think is an excellent fit there in that offense. Number 27, wide receiver Tyler Boyd. Number 31, wide receiver Sterling Shepard. Number 35, wide receiver Will Fuller. I mean, he thinks Jordan Howard, the running back.
So wait, hold on. Do you believe that the lack of success of the Cleveland Browns, along with RG3 essentially not starting for the Washington Redskins last year, has to be taken into account of to why Corey Coleman's this low?
It sounds to me like he doesn't like Corey Coleman. He said Coleman could prove to be a wise pick in time, but it might not all come together right away. So it sounds to me like it's a little bit of a shot.
Sure, it is.
Shot at Corey Coleman.
It is.
So he is the seventh receiver on the list, which I think is surprising. I will say the one guy that I when I went through that list and said it, that I think is going to surprise a lot of people is Sterling Shepard. I was a big Sterling Shepard fan. I think he's come into a great spot in New York, where all the attention's going to be on Odell Beckham.
The Browns liked him as a part of their top four.
Very much liked him, and we're hoping to get him in the second round. They were efforting him, but we're not able to land him. But, I mean, come on, man. If you're going to put him down behind the other receivers, that's fine. Behind Roberto Aguayo.
Yeah, come on.
Behind defensive lineman Malik Collins from the Dallas Cowboys, who he says won't be on the field all that often, but defensive coordinator Rod Marinelli will love him to be able to get after the quarterback from the interior, an interior pass rusher now who's going to play situational football. That hurts me.
Well, this may not make you feel much better, but maybe we'll try.
Number two.
I think that's disrespectful to Corey Coleman.
It is. It is. Now, our guy, we've had him on this show many times, John Clayton of ESPN, put up a list of the five teams that have regressed since the offseason began. Defending champion Broncos 1, Carolina 2, the Browns 3, the Jets 4, and the Bills 5. Now, okay, take that for what you will.
Can I take some umbrage with that?
Please, go ahead. Before I actually, my question was going to be, that's fine, he says that now, but who's going to take the biggest slide downward, you think, in 2016?
Okay, let's be perfectly honest about it. We can only be three games worse.
Yes.
That's it.
Correct.
That's the biggest backslide that we could possibly make is three games.
Correct.
Okay, we're not going to do that. Okay, I feel very confident in saying that. Number two, how can I guess if you want to hang on to old school veterans, you could say that. But for a team that just brought in 14 new players, six of them in the top 100 of the draft that they feel pretty excited about, and got the future first and two future seconds, I don't know how you can say that the Browns regress. Maybe he's talking about from a week one on-field standpoint.
No, I don't think so. He's talked since the offseason began. Here's his statement. Quote, "The Browns are putting everything into the draft. They had 14 picks this year but created plenty of holes, Alex Mack, Mitchell Schwartz, and on and on. There's no way the draft choices will be equal to the talent that departed.
This is the last time that I'm going to say this. Probably, actually, it won't be. Don't hold me to that. But I'm going to try to make it.
It won't be.
Get off the jock of our offensive line from a year ago. It wasn't that good. I watched Josh McCown be practically murdered week after week out there. I watched our running backs, who, by the way, Isaiah Crowell had the highest hit percentage in the backfield of any running back in the National Football League. And we know all he likes to do is get north-south. He's not a dancer. That's on the offensive line. Get off of their jocks. Alex Mack was not that good last year. And I said that all along, so now this isn't that he left on saying that. He wasn't that good. Mitchell Schwartz is a good pass blocker, not a very good run blocker. To think that all of a sudden, you know, the sky is falling on this offensive line, or that that offensive line was so good, you know, look at the stats. Most sacks, most quarterback hits allowed, most runs hit in the backfield allowed.
30th in rushing?
If you're that good of an offensive line, that doesn't happen.
Correct. Agreed.
Get off of them. Stop swinging.
A change of scheme midseason?
Put your feet back on the ground.
Well, you feel better after that? You have to feel better after that.
It's just like, it's one of those things that
it's
I think.
It's fingernails on a blackboard. I understand.
If you look at the names and the value associated with the names, I get it. But let's go watch the games. The line was not that good last year. I'm sorry. It wasn't.
All right. So having said all that, who's going to take the biggest slide downward once the season starts?
In the whole National Football League?
In the whole National Football League. It ain't going to be the Browns. Because as you put it, there wasn't much way for them to go down, much further for them to go down.
God, I'm going division by division.
I am too. I'm trying to look at last year's standings here.
Who finished second in the AFC East?
Last year, the Jets.
The Jets.
10-6.
I believe that I'll go with the Jets. They pop into my mind. I think the Jets will take a step back because of their uncertainty at the quarterback position.
All right, I'm going to give you two teams.
Right.
I'll give you one from each conference.
That's fair. I'll take that.
In the AFC, and I'm not sure it's because of anything that they've done, I just don't think the Kansas City Chiefs win 11 games again next year. I think the Raiders are going to be better. I just think the division is in general is going to be better. So I think they might backslide a little bit there in Kansas City. In the NFC, I think it's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles. They finished second in the NFC East last year, and if anybody wants to go to the window, they won't finish second or better in the NFC East this year.
I concur with that.
All right, guys, and finally on the forecast.
Number three.
Dino, can I just ask you before you say
sure,
it, and I know it's
ahead.
Poor
no,
time
ahead.
On my part, but I mean, do you think I'm, and feel free to disagree.
No.
Do you feel like I'm crazy with this offense? I'm sick of hearing about our offensive line from last year.
Yeah, I advocated strongly keeping Mitchell Schwartz because my going into the offseason, I felt like how can you take a rookie quarterback and put him behind an offensive line that wouldn't have Mack or Schwartz?
And to be in the interest of full disclosure, I said the same thing all along, and once I saw the money that he was signed for, I would have kept Mitchell Schwartz at that price point as well. I think now, though, that you've – and to say that they haven't added – assets there. Obviously, they feel pretty comfortable with Pastore. They've got Alvin Bailey that they brought in, who they actually liked more than obviously Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They draft Sean Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get 80 to 90% of what Schwartz gave you last year and save a lot of money? Yes. Is that the
possible.
Ultimate goal? No. But to me, I'm just too much.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's becoming a really tired take. It's like we're moving forward here.
Right, and the holes we created on our defense stunk last year.
Yeah.
It was an abomination.
Yes.
And I think some of that was players, but I think a lot of that was scheme. So maybe it could have gotten better just inherently with those same players in a competent NFL scheme.
Correct.
But at the same time, you just are adding speed and youth to those positions.
And look, a bad defense that couldn't stop anybody – and an offensive line that was highly overrated, that you couldn't run the ball at will, and you couldn't protect any of the passers that started a football game for us last year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you expect anything better than 3-13?
No, not when you look back on it.
No, now if you put it like that, no.
That's what I mean.
No.
I mean, Playmakers at wide receiver? Question mark.
I think we've addressed a lot of the question marks. Well,
I agree.
Will it take time? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
As much as you could with 14 picks.
Right.
That was why I had no issue with what the Browns did in the draft, because they looked at the holes and did their best to fill them and got extra assets for the next 2 years. Okay, great.
The difference is, and this team, and this is why I think this team will ultimately be hugely more successful than last year. And it could be hugely more successful in my mind with the exact same record. Last year's team was old and it was expensive and it was designed to win now. And it was a failure in that regard. This year's team is young. It is not expensive. And it is supposed to be ascending and showing signs of improvement. It's not a finished product.
All right, we got
that was it. I'm in. That was a Doug Deacon quick stop right
that
there.
That was. Would you like question three?
Yes.
This
Sorry,
is an easy one. No, it's okay. It's okay. I love the passion. All right, so Western Conference Finals in the NBA set after last night. Oklahoma City throttling and then holding on to beat San Antonio. They get Golden State. Guys, on the Friday forecast, who emerges from the West to hopefully play the Cavs in the NBA Finals?
Golden State Warriors, man. I just think Steph Curry, you saw flashes of him fresh off of the pine from that MCL injury, and yet he still had MVP-esque type of feel in pouring in the 17 in the overtime. If he can do it fresh off of injury, he's just playing his way back into shape, and I think his production will level off to the way that it did and be consistently every night, and I think that's going to be too much for the Thunder.
It's interesting. Thunder led in the fourth quarter of all the games they played with the Warriors, but couldn't close them out.
I think that'd be surprising. That's a stat we'll have to look up, is how many games did the Warriors trail in the fourth quarter in general and come back and win? I think they're just a team that when they flip a switch, they're a team that can do it.
And it's also, so that's a psychological thing. If, for example, in game one, it same holds, then that's in the Thunder's head. Now, if Thunder can overcome it, all of a sudden that could be a mystique breaker. I believe that in those games... For the Cavs, I think if you're the Cavs, you want to see the Thunder.
Oh, sure.
LeBron owns KD. I just don't see the Thunder being able to beat us in seven games. Now they've got some great role players, and Steven Adams is playing great. But I mean, if you're counting on Van Waiters, forget about it. Advantage team not counting on Van Waiters.
I love the not Deion Waiters, the former Browns linebacker.
I gotta give the kid credit
Van
for that.
Van Waiters.
He's always called him Van Waiters.
That's awesome.
Who was a linebacker for the
Browns
back in the day? Yeah. So
I love that. I love that. That's great.
The Warriors, I think, can beat the Cavs. I don't think the Thunder can, but I would not be surprised at all if the Thunder beat the Warriors. Russ,
who's gonna check Russ?
They don't have anybody they can check. They might have to put Draymond on Russ and put Iguodala on Durant, or Iguodala on Russ, or I don't know. It's not gonna be Clay or Steph.
And it might be Clay.
He's gonna hurt. I think that it will be tough with the physicality of Russ. It is gonna be tough for Steph Curry to go if he is at all not 100, truly not 100%. I think it's gonna be tough for him to survive seven games of the hurricane known as Russell Westbrook.
And keep in mind, Draymond hurt his ankle the other night too. So they don't play till Monday.
Hope it falls off.
I truly do believe though that the Thunder can't beat the Cavs, but that team with a ton of confidence is slightly scary, because I know we've got the big three, but I still think they would have two of the three best players on the floor. And whenever there are only five guys on the floor and you have two of the best 10, and I think, again, people can say, oh, well, Kyrie's as good as Russ. No, he's not. I'm sorry. He's
not even close.
I take if it would be OKC, number one, the Cavs would have home court, which I think is big. Remember, the Cavs swept OKC this year, both games without Kyrie.
Correct.
But we got
LeBron's owns Durant. That's the one thing. At the end of the day, I'll go back to that. LeBron owns Durant. So I want to see, for a Cavs championship, I want to see Oklahoma City. A championship where they beat the Warriors would be sweeter, though.
How live is it going to be, though, in the NBA with either the Thunder or the Warriors in the NBA Finals here in Cleveland again?
Oh, man, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Eastern Conference Finals are like...
walk through.
A speed bump.
We might sweep in there, too.
Yeah. I personally hope Toronto wins tonight. Let's start it Sunday, and let's
It's Sunday or Tuesday.
Yeah, if Toronto wins tonight, they win the series, and game one would be
Sunday.
Right.
But if Miami wins tonight, regardless of who wins game seven of their series Sunday, game
Open
one
Tuesday?
Of the East, yeah, would start Tuesday. Yeah.
Give me either.
I'm calling Tuesday. I don't think the Heat lose at home.
You wouldn't think so.
But. I won't either.
Did you see that Cleveland.com, supposedly, the article or the cartoon where it says which dinosaur would you rather play? And it had a picture of, like, the Raptors dinosaur and then a picture of Dwayne Wade.
No, I didn't see. That's pretty cool, though. I like that.
I saw another mock-up.
It was a cartoon.
I saw a mock-up of, like, a Raptor trying to choke out a Miami Heat mascot, and it was LeBron, K-Love, and Kyrie sitting on a bench watching the two of them, like, duke it out.
We're just chilling. We're done. All right, we'll take our final break. We'll probably have a few seconds left to wrap up the show, but thanks, everybody, for being with us. Dino, fantastic job there with the forecast. Thanks for being with us all week. Matt Wilhelm and I can't wait to get out on the practice field and see these rookies. And we will see them today. You can see them tomorrow. Come on out to FanFest. Come and see us. Come and take it in. It's a great experience for the whole dog pound, the whole family. So get your tickets now at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Want to thank Dino, our producer today. Thank Robert Klemko for being with us as well. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys, and we'll talk to you Monday and give you our impressions of everything we saw from these rookies over the weekend. For Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNO.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.